If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Well, welcome to another full edition of After Hours with me, Rick Cogan. This entire first hour is devoted to my friend Wally Podrajic and his book, written with Harry Castleman, called Watching TV, American Television, Season by Season, if you can imagine. Season by Season. This is the fourth edition. I don't remember. I must have read the first edition. When did the first one come out?
1982 or so.
That would be about right.
Yeah.
That would be about right.
Yeah.
Because if I read, I was thinking, I'm going to read a paragraph from the book. If I read a paragraph on every show, I would not finish this book and you would not stop listening to it for about 150 years. What's the scene of this book? Who came to who? Who talked to who? First of all, Harry Castleman is a lawyer, an attorney. I think he's probably retired now.
Correct. He's retired now. He's from Boston, still living in Boston.
You guys met up in Evanston.
We met at Northwestern University. Actually, we met over things Beatles, which is another whole,
yes, they have,
whole discussion
thread.
There's
some Beatles books out there. We'll try to get to everything in Wally's life.
Actually, after we had success with our first Beatles book, called All Together Now, we said, well, what do we want to do next? And so we went through the back and forth of, do you want to do the Rolling Stones? Do you want to do the, you know, do you want to do another rock band? And then we just said, no, that sounds boring. And here's the entire discussion we had. Me, let's do something else. Harry, how about television? Me, okay. And we knew exactly how we would approach it because we had already trained ourselves in terms of the being immersed in the subject. We had done that for the Beatles to give context for the music and all. So I said, what we'd like to do is tell the story of television chronologically, thematically, from both the programming side and the behind-the-scenes side, you know, so the business side, and just to make it even more interesting in the context of the real world.
Well, what distinguished this book, all the edition, I didn't read edition two and I didn't read edition three, but I've read one and four, is the human element in it. You two guys never, and you could easily do a book that didn't slough off the human element, but didn't concentrate on all the different parts. Yes, you could do 8 pages on Bob Newhart or 100 pages on Bob Newhart. Who wrote the show? Who produced the show? That's what makes this such a rich, detailed trip through American history. I mean, you have to say, don't you, Wally, that TV is American history.
Most definitely. It's like you're reading my prompt notes here. Basically, we kind of regard this as a scrapbook of us, that is not Harry and Wally, but of us collectively. Because that's how we've experienced history, and it's through the art and the technology of television, bringing all of that into our living rooms and now into our phones.
Don't you think we're going to be all over the place in this hour that we have? But what occurs to me is that there was a time when television and television shows, not just news or something exploding on TV, it was a bonding agent for humanity, frankly. You know, the whole water, did you see Newhart last night? Even up to, did you see Seinfeld last night? I always found that to be a very, very healthy kind of undercurrent running through American society. Am I making too much of this?
No, you're not. And as a matter of fact, we still have it just in different segments. So, for instance, if you're in a particular circle, I'll give an example. People ask me, what's one of your favorite recent shows? And that would be Only Murders in the Building.
Okay.
Really enjoy it. And it, I embrace it almost old school. I know it drops once a week. And it'll play anytime you want.
Sure.
Well, I'll make sure I get there before I've read anybody else's comments about that particular week's episode, so I can enjoy it that way. The reason I say it's still the same thing is then there are people that I talk with who also, not necessarily as dedicated as I am not to get any spoilers, but who say, oh, yeah, let's talk about it, because they've seen it too. And that's what we still get. There are so many choices we have out there, but you end up going to the choices that reflect those that you hang with.
Well, it's also true of American politics these days, and
yes.
And that in television. You also do. You also have a political facet to your life.
Oh, most definitely. Because
talk about that for a little while.
Well.
Because I always found that fascinating. I go, man, you know TV and you really know the Beatles. What are you doing working at the Democratic Convention, for instance?
Well, funny you mentioned the Democratic Convention, because one of the reasons I loved working on the Democratic Convention every 4 years, for more conventions than I almost care to admit, was I would get to see a snapshot of where TV technology was going.
Wow.
Because... Exactly. That's where the different corporates would want to show off their stuff. Look what we can do.
Mm.
And so that's where you start seeing a real focus on 3D hidden cameras trying to give you a sense of being on the convention floor, give you a sense of tying you into an event that's taking place outside of the convention hall. But mostly to say, look at this tiny little thing. It's going to bring you the world. Yeah. It's all in my backpack now as opposed to in 12 different trucks.
What do you do at the convention?
Well, in the past...
Besides observe.
That's besides observe.
You've got a number
of jobs. Yeah. In the past, I have done media logistics, which means I don't do anything with... the message. I don't do anything with what should the presidential hopeful say. No, that's not me. Instead, it's like I helped build the stages that the media people would be using. And in order to do that, I had to not only appreciate TV, but also radio, but newspapers, but also photographers, but also the international press, also... all of my best friends throughout the world is what it came down to. And I loved every minute of it because
did.
I got to see journalism at its best.
And journalism in action.
Exactly. These are people who want to tell the story. And that's what they're there for.
Fascinating. We got to take a little break, and we'll be back with Wally Pedraja talking about it. I want to hear some of his first memories of TV, and I also want to get into – I am – flabbergasted at the research that is in these 641 pages. We'll be right back. Apropos of nothing, I'm starting my new Kogan tradition of reading one paragraph every Sunday from watching TV, American television, season by season. It's in the fourth edition by Harry Castleman and my guest, Wally Pedrajic. Here's the beginning of Chapter 77. Quote, there is simply too much television, end quote. During the summer 2015, Television Critics Association's press tour, that quote from FX Network CEO John Landgraf was a striking observation, especially for a TV executive. To back up his statement, he cited more than 400 original scripted primetime series scheduled to air on U.S. TV in the calendar year 2015. They had found homes on cable, over-the-air channels, and increasingly streaming services. I ask you, Wally Pedrajic, that was some years ago, and I'm asking you now, is there simply too much TV?
If your goal is to watch everything, sure.
That would be impossible.
It is physically impossible to do that, but so what?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't read every book, even though I know, Mr. Kogan, you have tried many times.
I do my best.
But essentially, that's why one of the things that we've tried to do in watching TV is give people a taste of what's out there. Our design, you're talking about how big the book is. It goes...
Oh, it's a beautifully designed... everything about it is beautiful.
It goes 85 chapters and goes from the 40s till the 23-24 season.
Mm.
And what we try to do in... Well, not we try to. What we do in each chapter is say, you can read this chapter without reading any other chapter. It's going to give you a snapshot
exactly
of what was going on then. And or you could start on page one and go all the way through.
Yeah.
But we make it a point to have enough self-contained stories that you could be satisfied going through, unless there's an occasional cliffhanger that carries over into another season.
How did you two fellas, even from the very beginning, you have to have a very well-oiled working arrangement, do you not? I don't know how otherwise you do it without killing each other.
Well, it helps that most of the time we haven't been in the same city.
That's probably for the best.
So, but we had enough time together at Northwestern. Sure. We worked at the college radio station there, and the first draft of the first version of this book was in the same city and all.
Were you asked? Did someone come to you about this book? Were you approached to write this book? Because this, I'm thinking to myself, there are so, and as you know better than I. But if you just do a quick search online or in a bookstore, there are a lot of books about television.
But no book taking this approach. People didn't come to us initially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our current publisher, Syracuse University Press, came to us about a year and a half, 2 years ago to say, we need an updated version covering the most recent 10 years. But initially, it was hard to explain because people say, what, you're covering all of that? How are you going to cover all of that? So the only way we finally landed our contract, the original one was with McGraw-Hill, actually, was we wrote the entire book to that point. And then did a sample layout of what it would look like. Took one chapter and said, here's how we will do this. And that introduced the different elements. What we have is a main text.
Yep.
And then we have a schedule grid for the fall of, of each season. Yes, it's still only the commercial over-the-air networks, but that gives us a consistent through line from beginning to end. Then we have something we call date boxes, which is basically a timeline, which takes anything that isn't covered elsewhere that took place in that year, some photos. And then for this edition, one of the things we're very proud of is we've added pull quotes, which means that as you're going through the chapter, we have now boxed off and called out passages that tell you this is one of the things we're talking about there. And so it's like channel surfing through TV. You have a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there. But if you start, as they say, in any individual chapter, you start reading there from beginning to end, you will have a story that we think you'll enjoy.
That is what I did. I started with the streaming section.
The newest stuff. Yeah,
new section. Yeah. What's the first TV show you remember seeing in your life?
As a child? Or I remember seeing. Okay, the first one I actually remember seeing was The Honeymooners, believe it or not.
Really?
The Jackie Gleason show. And why do I remember that? And it could have been the reruns. I have no idea. But I liked the music.
Interesting.
And when you think about going through some of TV's golden growing up days in the 50s and 60s, even into the 70s, like something like Welcome Back, Cotter is a theme song, the music is the hook that gets you to maybe hang around. Because I couldn't give you a line-by-line reading of every episode of The Honeymooners, but I sure know what it sounds like. I sure know what it the emotions that it evoked when the stars came out on the screen.
One thing, that's fascinating. As a child of Bridgeport, where you're still...
Where I still reside.
Chicago, and people forget or never really knew the crucial and colorful role that Chicago played in the history of television. I mean, that must be a special for you, yes?
Well, yes, and also that perfectly illustrates the approach that we take in watching TV. Why was Chicago important? Was it because of the creativity, because of the talent? Sure, it was also a business issue. The coast-to-coast coaxial cable wasn't finished. You couldn't do live from New York turning up live in Los Angeles. So Chicago was the way station, the turning points. You could get it up to Chicago, and then you could feed this way, feed that way. But it wasn't It wasn't Coast to Coast instant. And sadly, once Coast to Coast was completed, and also the journey from live to film, Chicago was now more of a footnote, with an important exception. It was a talent pool.
Yep.
The talent from Chicago, whether it be, we're talking about Dave Garraway doing his programming here, and then when NBC says, well, we're going to have this, we really don't know what it's going to turn into, but we're going to do a morning show every day live. Who can we get to anchor that?
Yeah.
And Dave Garraway, of course, had demonstrated how
Dave
you could
Garraway,
do something
you, I
like
always
that.
Saw, my parents knew him, but I didn't know him at yeah. all, but always thought it's an incredibly unusual person
yeah.
to be, especially these days. But then again, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert were incredibly strange TV stars, and they were from here, too. We're going to spend the next half hour talking more with Waller. We're all over the place, so you know what you should do is just buy the book so you can continue this conversation with your loved ones. It is titled Watching TV, American Television Season by Season. And you can see Wally and his co-author, Harry Castleman, on the cover. It's not like a secret thing, but they're on on the cover. They're on the cover of the book. And when you get it, enjoy, but also stay tuned and enjoy more talk. Oh, we do? Oh, this clock is all wrong. I'll talk to Wally for two more minutes before we get to news. you know what? The show runs this. Thank God for Krista Flores. That's all I have to say. She runs this show. We should have done this at TV in 1952. Studs was an unusual character, and Studs was a big star.
And Studs was Larry David for his day.
Yes, exactly. God, that's well put.
I'm going to come in. Here's what we're going to do, but don't memorize the script. Here's what we're going to do, and we know how we're going to get there, more or less, but go. Be yourself. Perform. And it
was Minstrocki, sing a song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a delight to be part of the audience watching that. And so when you're saying, where did some of these ideas come from? Guess what? They've always been here. Different technology, different generations enjoy discovering the same things.
Oh, that's interesting.
And doing
wow.
it again.
Wow. Wow. Who was, to your mind, the biggest star in the history of television? I know that's a crazy question. Someone would say Johnny Carson, I suppose. This is a question that prompts laughter, but we'll answer it after the news. Is that okay, Flor? Krista? We'll answer it after the news. Wally and I figure out who it is, or who it never was, or who it could never be. Maybe when, you know, God comes back and has his own show. We'll be back. Welcome back. Before we went to news, I asked Wally Podrajic, the author with Harry Castleman, of the new, brand new, fourth edition of Watching TV, American Television, Season by Season. It is roughly, it's near 700 pages, but it is, it's less than like a dollar for 10 pages. It's $60. One of the great literary bargains out there now. I asked him who's the most important person in television. Like an idiot. What an idiotic question.
After we laughed a little bit.
Yeah, we laughed. He's written a list. I meant, you know, performer and or producer and or innovator and or network head. What do you think? You can't. There's no one person.
Well, there's no one person, and it sort of underscores why you have to look at eras of television.
Exactly.
Because
yes.
they're like, for instance, if I mention Johnny Carson to the students I teach, it's like, who's that?
Yeah.
It just doesn't matter. In fact, in some cases, yeah, Conan O'Brien. He was already. He's someone who had his peak, and now he's a solid performer.
Indeed.
He's indeed part of that landscape out there. But there isn't he's not the one that would be defining. So I picked out a couple, and I'll give you the reasons why. Putting aside David Sarnoff or William F. Haley, who starts the whole management and creation of CBS and NBC. Pat Weaver was an innovator on NBC who created the aforementioned Today Show, Tonight Show, etc. He says, we can do more things with television than we thought.
You call an innovator, is there a thin line between being an innovator and a visionary?
They could be one and the same.
Yeah, right.
They could be one and the same. One of my personal favorites is a gentleman by the name of Roy Huggins. Now, he created...
I don't even know that name.
He created Maverick. He created The Fugitive. And he was a go-to person for Warner Brothers Studios to do TV stuff in the late 50s into the 60s. Mm-hmm. And actually carrying over even into like Jim Rockford and all.
Wow.
So he would be someone who knew how to tell a good story, but he also knew how to produce a show.
Gotcha.
And so he was able to come in on budget, so to speak. Brandon Tartikoff coming back to Chicago. Yeah. Started here, visionary, innovator for NBC. He's the one who gave us Seinfeld.
Tartikoff also, if I'm not wrong, because this isn't during my period of TV, being a TV critic, he gave a development deal to Brandmeier, I think.
I'll take your word for it. Yeah. I think you're right, though. Yeah, because there was a little bit of a venture into that.
And Brandmeier was the first person they'd given a development deal to after David Letterman. And Brandmeier, of course, as we all know, did not make it on TV.
Excellent on radio.
Yeah, of course.
But some people can successfully go one to the other. And sometimes it is just either the times, the talent, or just exactly what translates. One of the early challenges for television was going from radio, which was hugely successful.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one of the things we like to point out in watching TV is that radio paid for television. I mean, the success of radio into the 1950s was covering the red ink that was being bled by television because they could still, I mean, they were a money machine.
Sure.
Right there. And so once you... So some people, like a Jack Benny, for instance, was able to go from radio to television comfortably.
Danny Thomas. Well, I'm thinking of some early people. Like, what about Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz?
In terms of defining television, both of them actually had radio roots. Lucille Ball had success in radio and some series, My Favorite Husband and all. And she also was, a B-lister in the feature films.
Yeah, right.
And so when she and husband Desi Arnaz came up with this idea of doing a married couple situation comedy, and they told the network they didn't want to do it live from New York. I said, well, you want to do it from California? All right. So we want to do it on film? Well, we're not going to pay for that. So they said, we'll pay for it. And so they retained the rights.
Shrewd business move.
And
there.
I don't know if they necessarily thought of it exactly far-sighted, but quickly it became apparent that, wait, that means we could fill this half hour and then we could run those same episodes again. And then going, say, over a 10-year period, then we resell them to local markets who then fill their evenings, afternoons, et cetera, with I Love Lucy. And then let's look at the world market, et cetera. So in terms of making a change in television, it was they weren't the first to do film.
Right.
But they were the first to show what you could do with film.
Let's talk about now. This is fascinating. We could talk about our notions of who the most influential or important people are. There's no question that in this day and age, the king of what you refer to in the book as linking, Dick Wolfe.
Yes.
Is a phenomenon? How did he happen, Wally?
Well, I mean, first of all, he was a good writer, good producer, and what he... And he created Law and Order.
Yeah.
And Law and Order went on forever.
Yes.
And there were a couple of spinoffs that came from Law and Order. But when Law and Order sort of hung it up for a while, it's back again.
It's back and it's terrible now, I will say.
But, well, that's the old-time critic
in
you.
That's the old critic in me. Yeah.
But what Wolf did is he realized that what you want to sell is an idea, an environment. And so you have the Chicago environment. You have Chicago PD. It started with Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Med. So some others, it didn't last quite as long. But the thing is, they're all inhabiting the same universe. They don't do a lot of crossover, but they do, events, they do crossovers. Yeah. And that recognizes how we as viewers view television. Namely, as far as we're concerned, it is an alternative world out there that we're kind of peeking into. So, of course, these characters should know each other. Of course, these characters live around the corner. They don't see each other all the time, but they could see each other at any given moment. And Wolf managed to turn that into an incredibly successful franchise and an ensemble, which means means that no one performer is so valuable that to be irreplaceable.
Yeah.
When you have the ensemble, the story keeps going, the setting keeps going, and the people who are inhabiting it. Well, just like your friends and neighbors, they move on, new ones come in, etc. And so in terms of the way you want to do television, Wolf, again, he didn't invent the idea of cross,
right,
but he certainly perfected it. Wow. And the CW, for instance, did that with the whole DC universe of superheroes and such. Yeah. They knew each other. They were in each other's stories. There would be these massive crossover events.
I could tell you, you're going to have to come on again because we barely scratched
the surface. Happy to do so.
We have a, and you can read about this fine man in Sunday's paper a couple weeks from now. By me, a story by me. When we come back after our last short commercial break, I'm going to have him sort of address the question that begins the chapter titled Recap and Conclusion. So please stay tuned. It's a very provocative question. I will echo the Christian Science Monitor in saying, quote, a pleasure to read, end quote. I will cite David Biancully, a TV critic, that's a hard job, believe me, for NPR's Fresh Air by saying this is the best one-stop shopping detailed overview of TV season by season ever published. I could not echo those sentiments more loudly. Harry Castleman and my guest Wally Pedrajic, Walter Pedrajic, are the authors of Watching TV, American Television Season by Season. It's in its fourth edition. Okay, my friend, where do we go from here? Meaning television.
Right. The answer is easy and hard at one at the same time. First of all, recognize that television has always been in some sort of flux from the technology side.
Sure.
And from the business side. But right now, we're in a particularly demanding time. And this comes back to streaming and the fact that we don't have 3, 4, call it 5 major over-the-air networks.
Right.
And also, we don't have just the... Let's call it 100 channels on cable.
Yeah.
We don't have just that. And we also have the ability in different forms of getting things, I won't say exactly when we wanted, but accessible enough. So remember, I was mentioning when we were talking earlier about how much I love Only Murders in the Building. Yeah. Now, there's nothing that says I have to wait until the next week of the season to see it. I could wait till the entire season is over, right, come back and watch episodes 1 to 10 in a couple of binges,
yeah,
and read it as a book, basically.
Right.
Follow
right,
that all. And so our relationship with TV, that has changed. We have become more demanding at being able to grab anything we want when we want to get it. And so, therefore, it's the beginning of our recap and conclusion. A chapter starts with "No one knows where this is going."
Right.
Is the line, and it's how do we make this work? How do we make money on this? You had read a quote about there's too much television. That was actually true. Is true. There is too much television. If you want to make the same amount of money per program you used to be able to make with only ABC, CBS, NBC as the players, that's not how it works anymore. And the industry still hasn't figured out how to make up for the fact that people don't want to subscribe to cable in the same numbers.
Same way, yeah.
And they are not as prone to tune in broadcast as they may have been. Though there's more broadcast tuning in than you would expect based on all
No kidding. I thought one of the broadcast networks would have failed by now.
No, because, of course, that's still how you could reach the most people, at least as the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a streamer, often, not always, there's stuff that's birthed online, but there's also stuff that says we started here and now we're going to move over to the streaming world. We started on cable and we're going to move over to the streaming world. A recent example would be Yellowstone. It was a cable channel, a cable offering, and it was held in as, well, I won't say, it's with such little regard that Paramount licensed the streaming rights to a competitor, regretted it
and
almost
then it
immediately,
caught fire, right?
And it caught fire.
Yeah.
We said, "Where can I watch it online?" Well, not on our channel. You can't. So that's why you have all these other spinoffs and all these parallels, because those they didn't license to anyone else.
What do you think about that guy, Taylor Sheridan? I mean, he is making a huge impact,
and he's an example of a person in his time that is doing everything right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned Roy Huggins. He was doing everything right in his era. Of course, you have the Norman Lears of the world that do everything right in their era. But that doesn't mean it'll last forever. That's why they want to make sure they got themselves covered with licensing rights, got themselves covered with ownership and such, because that's what's going to spell success for anybody venturing into the television business, the video business right now. And there are now so many other ways you can make it work. Repurposing, repackaging.
Give me an example.
Well, an example would be there's the Toon TV. This came out of Weigel communication with MeTV and UTV and such. Well, they have a cartoon channel.
Yeah.
They have a cartoon channel. Well, what's on the cartoon channel? A couple of original hosted programs. It's old cartoons. It's old cartoons. Let's say that again. It's old cartoons from the 20s, 30s, and 40s back to the 80s and 90s Saturday morning cartoons. And they're all repackaged, because if you haven't seen them, it's new to you. If you have seen them but you're feeling nostalgic, they're great for you.
Wow.
That's what we have unfolding.
There's a game show network.
Oh, yes, definitely. I've seen Match Game 82, whatever, reruns. And things I never thought would work as reruns, like game shows from 40 years ago, they do.
That's amazing. What does it tell you about the American public, too?
That we love to be easily entertained.
Yeah. What do you think? What's a TV? I mean, I know you're not a scientist, but what's a TV going to look like? Delivery systems have radically changed.
Everything has changed. Yeah, when I teach my course at the University of Illinois Chicago, History of Television, one of the things I say, day one, what is television? Anything you see in video form. I don't care how you're looking at it. It could be on a tablet. It could be on your phone. It could be on a widescreen, a home theater. All of that is TV. What is TV content? Anything that appears on there. It could be created for that medium, or it could be repurposed from some other medium.
In the last 4 minutes we have left, Wally Pedrajic, and this has been fascinating on many levels for me, talk to me about YouTube, which is television created, as your definition, television created for the masses and by the masses. And to me, it doesn't, I mean, it's everything and nothing at the same time.
It is so everything that is the probably the most popular channel out there.
Yeah. Billions of views, billions and billions of views.
It is, they probably would fight hard against it being becoming like a generic, lose my trademark and such. But basically, so many people say, I'll YouTube it. I'll look at YouTube and see if they've got that coverage. Even if it's only a starting point,
Yeah. You
will see something posted because, yes, you could do, someone could do an unauthorized posting on there, and that'll be taken down.
Right.
But the point is that people think of it as, oh, yeah, that's where I get a taste of what people are talking about. Now I can go somewhere else and see the full version. Now I can go somewhere else. Remember I mentioned Hulu?
Yeah.
Hulu was the answer to YouTube.
Mm.
It was the authorized, created by NBC, Fox, and then later ABC joined to say, we've got a place that you can go to see the highlights of our programming, authorized and official.
Wow.
So it feeds into the whole assumption that I can see anything anytime I want, and if I can't, I should. So someone deliver it to me because that's what I want. That's where we are.
You think YouTube's dangerous?
No.
No.
No. No. I'm so
but
blasé.
What did I watch recently or read something that there's all these people on YouTube that are making millions of dollars? They're like kids. In fact, the kids. I mean, the kids in your class at Circle, as I call it, are these the people? How are they going to change TV, those kids?
That's their language.
Yeah.
Look, when I said do a presentation, and someone asked, can I do a video recording and do a pre-recorded video presentation for 5 minutes? Sure. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the language that you feel most comfortable with. So go do it.
Wow. You have any signings coming up for this fantastic book?
I'll let you know when we do. I don't have one or two immediately scheduled, but we will have some later this year. This is not a one and done release. We're going to be talking about this for a while.
Because TV is never done. Well, it's a remarkable job. Tell your friend Harry that you got your tuition's worth at Northwestern
just by
the two of you meeting.
Yes.
This is just a remarkable book, and it is such. The thing about it is it's good for any sort of research that anybody's doing about TV, but it's also just a fun and informative and compelling read.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate that.
Give my best to your lovely wife, Grace, who's one of the great genealogists on the planet, and look for a story about Wally in a picture. I'm not going to tell you where he's chosen to have a Tribune photographer photograph him, but all of you out there who still get the Tribune, it will make great sense to you 2 weeks from today.